Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Well, if this is an oldie, I'll take oldies every day for 1,000, Alex. One of the classic oldies. That Blue Oyster Cult is still around, by the way. They're still playing like state fairs and stuff. They're just hanging. Yeah, well, you don't want to get that's he played that and Daryl played that. Welcome back to the Morning Show with John and Hugh in honor of your ghost story there, because you don't want to fear the Reaper, right? And all that. But I tell you what, we have so much to chop up today, including the chop on, right? And we're going to get back into the Braves, but we do want to bring you up to speed on a few other things that are happening with the Atlanta Falcons. We know that rookie minicamp is going to be next week, a week from tomorrow, as a matter of fact, the rookie minicamp in Flowery Branch, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the 11th, the 12th, and the 13th, which will be. Of course, it's interesting every year, Hugh, when you get the rookies out there. OTAs are coming up, rookie minicamp. Now it gets real because we get to see, for the first time, either in person or on video, our first look at Calvin Ridley. And the more I think about
a Falcons helmet.
Right. Deidre Sinnott and Isaiah Oliver. But the more I think about, you know, this draft, the more I'm starting to like it. And the more I think about Calvin Ridley in a Falcons uniform, flying down the side, the more I'm excited about this.
As you should be, John. I mean, it's a season renewed. You got some new players. You have a new opportunity to hoist the Lombardi Trophy. So I mean, you feel no different right now. Okay, wait a minute. Let me pull this back a little bit,
yeah, because
I'm pretty sure Cleveland fans don't feel like this. Like they have a shot. Like Cleveland fans don't feel like they have a shot at the title. But Cleveland fans feel like they have a shot at winning a few games this year. I mean, there's something to be optimistic about, and that's basically what this time of year is. You have some new players on the squad, you have some new talent, and hopefully that talent is good enough to get you over the hump.
Well, the one thing I think we want to see, if you're a Falcons fan, when you talk about improvements in certain areas, one of the areas they focused on was special teams. We know that, to get better in coverage and better in returns. You want to see the defense grow. And have, you know, Sinnott, kind of fall into a nice rotation there. And by the way, the Falcons are going to do something else at defensive tackle, too. If the defense gets better, it's the offense, really, that's the focal point in a lot of ways, because they went from such a great offense that took them to the Super Bowl to an offense that was kind of meh, you know, last year, right? I mean, they were eh.
You know what, honestly, John, they were still a good offense. They had some plays for us as Falcons fans that we looked at and was like, for real? Like, especially like drop touchdowns and drop balls, like key drop balls. It was like, for real? This is what you're giving us? But they were still good enough to make it to the playoffs. You know, with all those miscues, they just weren't that high-flying, record-setting offense that they were a year before. And that's what had everybody scratching their head.
And then we come out after the fact, after the playoff win over the Rams and the loss to Philadelphia, to find out that Devontae Freeman, the star running back, the high-paid star running back, was playing on a gimpy knee, had serious issues with his knee, the PCL and the MCL in his knee, and was actually limping around. We didn't know this at the time, but he was, and so he had this knee injury. Devontae spoke yesterday and talked about a number of things, and we have the audio for you. Let's begin with Devontae talking about progression of his injury and where he is now.
I'm able to do a lot of things that I couldn't do back in January, February. Cutting, making harder cuts, sprinting a little faster. The progress is getting better and better each day, so just going along with the program.
Yeah, and cutting is the critical thing for Devontae, because it's that – he's got such great vision, Hugh, but it's that ability to make those small little cuts in tight quarters that separates him from a lot of backs.
Yeah, and it's not only that, John, it's that stopping and starting. I mean, you know, when I got older, that's one of the first things that I noticed to go was that ability to just burst. Like, you know, when you talk about the ball being snapped and the running back hitting the hole, just that initial burst of speed, that's one of the first things that go. So for him to be able to do that now, that's pretty good. And he'll get all of that back along with his confidence to play. But that had to be tough for him last year to be out there playing and not being able to be the guy that he was. But my question would be this. If he was hurt like that, number one, why share it now? And number two, why not Tevin Coleman get more burn? If he was hurt like that.
Yeah, were the coaches even aware? I mean, that's one thing that we've never heard.
They have to be aware. They have to be aware. And it kind of makes you wonder, John, because we were always told that they're 1A and 1B.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if 1A is hurt, then 1B is just as good. And why didn't we go to 1B a little bit more? Which I don't know.
Well, yeah, and then the big question about why was – and no offense to him, but why when you're battling for the, you know, this huge win, first down and goal from, inside the 10-yard line to win the game, and you got Teron Ward on the field, and people are like, okay, why isn't your number three back?
I mean, it kind of makes you wonder. And I was always told when I played, like, when you walk out there on that field, regardless, like, whatever you have ailing you, I'm not saying he used it as an excuse, but you can't come back and say, hey, that I was banged up, because you have to be able to perform at a certain level that you're expected to perform at. So it's one of those things, much love mm-hmm. for Devontae and everything. Not trying to be that negative Nancy, but you're in a battle for you like when the playoffs start, you're in a battle for your playoff lives. And if you're not 100%, if you're not clicking on all cylinders, you're kind of putting the team in a bad spot.
All right. Devontae Freeman did talk to the media yesterday. More from Devontae Freeman as we talk about the Falcons. Again, OTAs coming up. The rookie minicamp is ahead. And Devontae talking about a number of things. Feel free, guys, just jump in here. Anybody, Bo, Wendy, Hugh, if you got something to say about this. Let's run a bunch of sound here. Let's start with Devontae talking about the one thing he thinks he can do to help this team.
Availability is the best ability, to me to have. Because if you can't help your team, then can't win games. Especially if all players are key players. But if you're one of those players that, have a major role, a major impact on the team, the team is counting on you. So you got to be available.
Well, yeah, that's right. Rule number one, you got to be available. I mean, because the rest of it, it doesn't matter. If you can't go, you're not going to have any impact on the team. What is some of the expectations that he has, Devontae, from OTAs and from camp?
Be 100% healthy. Be ready for game one. Continue to get better each day while I'm here and take advantage of these opportunities. And each practice, I got to go out and, take advantage of it.
All right. So that's kind of the personal angle here. Now let's ask Devontae another question about what his thoughts are about the offense at large. Sarkisian year two and the fact that they went offense in the first round of the draft.
We just trying to get better. We want to be the fastest team in the NFL, obviously. Just trying to keep putting the pieces to the puzzle. And it's all about having depth, having guys available, healthy. When your number called on, you got to be ready to go.
One of the things I find fascinating in all these draft recaps that we read, Hugh, one of the things that kind of jumps out at you if you go to, and it doesn't matter what site you choose to go to, is that the analysis tends to be now of, wait a minute, the Falcons got Calvin Ridley? Wait a second now. You mean with Julio Jones and with Mohamed Sanu? I think the national media is kind of realizing, they went, wait, Calvin Ridley dropped to the Falcons? And so I think they're all kind of going, uh-oh, this could actually, because the uh-oh comes in, if they can even sniff what they did offensively in the Super Bowl year to go with that defense, you're underselling how good this team could be.
Yeah, but now, John, I think that there might be a question of whether or not how healthy is your running back. And how much can you get from Tevin Coleman? I think, with everything that Devontae Freeman is dealing with him coming back from this injury and him with this concussion protocol stuff, I think that kind of opens the door a little bit for Tevin. I really do. That opens the door for him a little bit, and Ito, for that matter. Ito might be that guy that, he might be the next Devontae Freeman. Because the one thing you have to know about the NFL – is that even though Devontae got his money, there's always going to be somebody that's coming to take your job. I mean, that's just the truth about the NFL. Like, whether or not the coaches want to tell you that or not, but somebody's coming to take your job. And that's the business of the NFL, is to always stay competitive and always get the most out of the what they can from the people that they have. So there might be a situation where they're looking at it like, hey, we might need to get some more offensive weapons because we don't know how long Devontae Freeman is going to be available to us. And that's the truth of it. I remember sitting in the Brian Westbrook's. He had over 2,000 all-purpose yards as a running back his last year at the Philadelphia Eagles. And I remember sitting in the press box with Ike, and Ike said something that really resonates to me, and it kind of puts you in the same situation that – it kind of reminds me of the situation that Devontae's in now. A few years earlier, Brian was going through some contract negotiation. He got his money. Bottom line, he got his money. He had one of the best seasons that he had as a Philadelphia Eagle. And I remember leaving the press box, I said, he'll never have a season like that again. And I was like, what do you mean? He said, to have 2,000 all-purpose yards, he said, they're about to get rid of him. He said, that's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they got rid of him that next year, and he ended up going to San Francisco. But it's like that's that position, John, that running back position. And to look at the meteoric rise that Devontae Freeman had in a short period of time, and then you look at the number of injuries that he's had in a short period of time. As a team, you have to start, like, even though he's a fairly young guy, you got to start looking towards the future.
Well, they did in drafting Ito Smith, and Devontae Freeman offered his advice to Ito.
You know, you got to let him grow. When I was a rookie, I had growing pains. I had to understand what it took to be a pro. You just have to take care of your body first and be available. You know, that's the best thing you could be, is available. Find an older guy that, you know, he could look up to in the same position as him.
Well, that might be you. And by the way, Ito Smith, if you've seen him on tape, remember this about running backs. Yes, just step back for a second if you're a football fan. Yes, there are the Zeke Elliotts and the Todd Gurleys, right? I mean, the superstars in college. I guess Le'Veon Bell to some degree, though I have to say that Le'Veon Bell as a pro was far better than I ever thought he would be coming out of Michigan State. But a lot of times you get the Devontae Freemans, all right? You get guys who were good in college, but they weren't winning Heismans, all right? And they blossom into – Alvin Kamara was good in college, wasn't winning a Heisman. He was the number two running back at Tennessee. So just because you go, what's an Ito Smith, just because he played at Southern Miss, doesn't mean this guy's got hops, he's got quick. I like a lot of this, what I see on him on film.
I mean, you got to look at what they're asking their running backs to do here. And I think you have to marry that with – the expectations of the team. They're not asking him to be Ezekiel Elliott. They're not asking him to carry the ball between the tackle 20 to 25 times a game and then carry it out of the backfield. They're asking him to get probably 15 carries of rushing, maybe 12 to 15 carries, and then catch the ball probably coming out of the slot or going on a wheel route or something like that. And he's not taking that kind of punishment. He's not that kind of back. And they're not asking their backs to do that. And this is the two-platoon system. There's only a few teams in the NFL that have one primary running back, like that just has one guy that just totes the rock. What, you're talking about the Dallas Cowboys,
LA Rams,
the Rams, the Steelers. Chargers, the Steelers. Like, there's only a few teams in the NFL that actually have just, like, one back. Most teams have their two-back set where they're thunder and lightning or they're change of pace guy. And the Falcons are one of those teams because it's hard to find that generational workhorse. Now the Giants look like they're going to be that team, but it's kind of hard to find those guys. So you have to keep getting, you know, more running backs almost every 3 to 4 years.
Now, I know I'm the keeper of the Kool-Aid and the driver of the bandwagon, and I'm Mr. Optimistic, and I'm already over my skis about the Braves and Atlanta United and about what could happen this year. And that's, of course, part of our poll question today: what's going to happen with the Atlanta Braves? Are they going to win the World Series? Are they going to win the NL East? Right? I mean, I haven't even started with the poll questions about the, and we'll get to them later in the summer about your expectations for the Falcons and for this offense. I will say that my answers will be Wendy Adams on those polls on the positive side. Okay, I'm just saying. It's
Super Bowl
a little teaser.
Champs in Atlanta. I'm guessing that's how it'll go with you, John. But yes, Braves are 18-11. If you missed it last night. First place in the NL East right now. So have your expectations for this season increased or not? Right now, 36% of people say they're hoping for a wild card, 29% just hoping for above 500, 22% NL East champs, and 13% World Series. But the votes have been kind of all over the place this morning. It's a close race.
All right, and the reason I voted for NL East champions is because you can't know about the World Series. But I'm all in favor of the people who did vote for the World Series. What the heck? Let's set the bar as high as we can. But here's why NL East. The NL East is on notice, Hugh Douglas. They are on, when you have 13 of your 18 wins already this year have been against the Phillies, the Nats, and the Mets. They are. You tell me that in those locker rooms, those teams aren't going, geez, you know, these young Braves, we're going to have to deal with them for the season, aren't we?
I mean, respect. It's a certain respect that goes along with that. There's no doubt about that. Respect. Respect is due.
Yep, respect is due. And I think that the Braves, again, they're serving notice I think if you think that this is just a hot start, you're not paying attention. I think there's a lot more than just hot start in what the Braves are doing. A lot more. Man, you are going to the oldies card today.
I think that's what I feel like today. And
good for you.
So we ain't going to get no trap music?
Nope.
Man, this song, that was 1975.
Came through dripping, drip, drip.
We might get that.
All right, hand me down my walking cane. I got to go into the next segment. As we continue with John and Hugh, we'll talk about the biggest name that nobody in the NFL wants. Here we go. It's already the sounds of the National Football League here in early May with OTAs, mini camps, and whatnot coming up. A lot of big news that's been going on in the NFL. And a lot of roster moves. And the Falcons, by the way, will probably make a few more roster moves. There are a lot of available guys out there, like in the defensive tackle spot. Speaking of that, Jonathan Hankins doesn't have a job yet, which is kind of interesting to me. Neither does Dez Bryant. There's some guys out there that are pretty good players, you, that are just sort of sitting there.
I don't think Dez Bryant's going to be a fit for the Falcons. Nah, I don't think that would be a good move. But the Dez Bryant thing kind of played out the way that I thought it would, John, to be totally honest, especially after we heard how he turned down the Baltimore Ravens job. I mean, the Baltimore Ravens offered him a contract, and he said no. But he was very specific in where he wanted to play. And how he wanted to make the Dallas Cowboys pay. You know, sometimes when you're a free agent, things don't always go the way that you want them to go. And and that old saying comes into play, a bird in the hand, beat two in the bush.
Mm-hmm.
And it don't seem like ain't nobody beating down the bush like they were, or like it was reported that they were a few weeks ago when he got cut. You know, because his agent came out and said there was a few teams that were interested in Dez Bryant. And that does not seem to be the case now.
Yeah, because when Dez Bryant got cut, the report came out, and correct me, it was like Ian Rappaport or Adam Schefter. One of the two said, I think it was Schefter, who said that within 2 minutes of the official word of Dez being cut, the agent for Dez had three phone calls from three NFL teams who all went, okay. But apparently Dez is asking for way too much money, because maybe these teams are going, well, we'll take Dez, but he's got to do an incentive-related deal. And apparently didn't want to do that.
And probably not only that, John. I mean, Dez said that when he left the Dallas Cowboys office, that he said that he would see them twice a year. So that indicates that he wanted to be in the NFC East. And the NFC East, the Eagles came out and said that they did not have any interest in Dez Bryant. I don't know if any other team in the NFC said anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the Eagles made it clear that, no, we're not looking at Dez Bryant. And I'm assuming that the other teams felt the same way. So you really don't have a choice. When you're a free agent, you somewhat have – if you have options, you have a choice. But when you only have one team calling, you got to do what you got to do. And for you not to go to the Baltimore Ravens, that was probably not a smart move on Dez Bryant's part.
Yeah, because if he wants to go back to the Ravens and call him again, you think he's getting $21 million? Yeah, no, they're not going to pay you $21 million. We'll pay you $10.
I don't even know if that's the case, John. I think that with training camp, well, OTAs this weekend, rookie camp and everything, all that, whatever you want to call it, that there are going to be a lot of young receivers that have just stepped fresh off a college football campus or college campus, and they're going to get their opportunity. And they're going to look at them first. Dez Bryant probably won't have a job, if any job. It's going to be – he won't have a job until the season starts.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll probably be after the season starts, and it'll be after you've made your roster, so that if he's not on your roster, you don't have to pay him for a full year. It'll probably be something where he has to earn his way. Because one of the knocks on Dez Bryant is that He hasn't had a 100-yard game in about what? I thought I saw the stat. It was like 24 games or something like that. It was like a long stretch where Dez Bryant didn't even have a 100-yard game, and he was making a lot of money. He was making a lot of money at Dallas, and he wasn't worth the biggest thing was he wasn't worth his production. And that's what it is. If you're not producing, they're not trying to pay you.
We're talking about the NFL and some of the headlines. Yesterday, there's something interesting that happened. It was the last day, and this sounds like a technicality, but let me walk you through it a little bit. The last day the teams could exercise the fifth-year options on guys that were rookies 4 years ago, right? Which means, you know, you get the five-year deal. The option year is always the fifth year. All these guys are going into their fourth year, and so the fifth-year option, are you going to pick up the option and keep the player for another year? And a lot of teams said no. Now, these guys are going to stay on their teams. Players, for example, like Shane Ray from Missouri, the Broncos did not pick up his option, all right? One of the more surprising ones, Dante Fuller, the star of the Jaguars. The Jaguars did not pick his option up. Now, it doesn't mean he's going to play for the Jaguars this year, and he could conceivably play for the Jaguars into the future. They just didn't pick up the option because they want to renegotiate the deal, but they run the risk of him going out into the free agent market as well. So it'll be interesting to see how this kind of all plays out.
You know, I thought this was interesting because, especially the Shane Ray one, because at first they were talking about picking up his fifth-year option. They were talking about it. Because I remember that because that's the same time that the Falcons decided to pick up Vic's fifth-year option. And I don't know what his number was, but I looked at it as an anomaly initially because when I saw that they weren't picking up Shane Ray's, that was the first one that I saw. I saw that. I'm like, man, they're not picking up his option. And I thought he was a pretty good, decent player for the Denver Broncos. And then as I started to look around, John, and I saw a lot of teams aren't picking up that fifth-year option for a lot of players. I'm wondering if that is because it all depends on how you look at it. That might not be a bad thing. Maybe that's a good thing for the players. So if they play well this season, they have the opportunity to play themselves into some more money. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's probably how you look at it. Like as opposed to like say Vic Beasley, he's locked into that fifth-year option. He's locked into that. So that means that he won't be a free agent until his sixth year. And as you notice how the NFL is going, John, like you're hard pressed to play 10 seasons in the NFL.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? It's hard to get that. And that's what it's looking like right now. It's this like cats, it's hard to play a long time. So they're probably looking at it like, you know, we're going to give Vic Beasley this fifth-year option. So that way when he goes into free agency in his sixth year, he might not see that big, big payday that you would probably normally see if you were like in your fourth year.
Well, his jump between the fourth – picking up his fifth-year option, I would just walk you through this. So Vic Beasley is about to get paid like he's never been paid before, right? I mean, because Vic Beasley – look, $700,000 is a boatload of money to you and me. To an NFL player, $700,000, you know, and that's about what Vic was making. And what's he going to make in his fifth year when they pick it up, Bo? What did you tell me in my ear?
14.2, which is exactly what Dante Fowler was going to make. Wow. And it was what Shane Ray was going to make because Shane Ray is technically a defensive end in their 3-4 system.
Right.
To tell you how that goes in, Vic's contract was fully guaranteed for 4 years, 14.49 when he signed it as a rookie. His fifth year will be 14.2.
In other words, as much money as he made the first 4 years in 1 year.
That's a way to protect the teams, John. I mean, that's what that fifth-year option does. It's almost like he doesn't have the luxury of going into free agency and naming his own price.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of set the price for him.
Well, we expect him to deliver now, though. I mean, if you're going to pay him that much money over the next 2 years, he's got to get back down with that hand to the ground on that defensive line, which is what they expect, and he's going to have to become a duo attack, right? I mean, you're going to have to deliver for that kind of cash. We got to see it out of Vic. And I know a lot of people are kind of questioning Vic again, but you know what? This is what I'm thinking with Vic Beasley. I'm thinking that he is going to perform again because he's going to be able to focus again on just one thing. Because I think what he's really good at is rushing the passer. I mean, he does make plays in space, and he's made a lot of good plays in space. But I think what he's really good at is rushing the passer. So hopefully that all works out. One other NFL story out there. Eric Reed is a star, as you may know, at the star defensive back. And he's been kind of going around the league and trying to find a job. He's a free agent. And he suspects that because he was one of the guys who was kneeling, that that's being held against him. And so he said, you know, come up close with a job. He came up close in a couple of places to getting a new job and walked out thinking that maybe it was because of the kneeling thing I didn't get a job. So he has contemplated filing a case sort of like Colin Kaepernick here. Does Eric Reid have a case, really? I'm not sure that he does.
You know what, John? This is a tough one because you look at him and it was another guy. It's a few safeties out there that don't have jobs right now. It's a few of those guys out there. It's going to be a hard case to prove. One of the other safeties that's out there that doesn't have a job right now as of today is Kenny Vaccaro. He played safety. Where did he play safety at? He played for the Saints. He played for the New Orleans Saints. And he was there, and he doesn't have a job right now. So it's one of those things where I understand where Ed Reed's coming from. And when you look at his last visit to the Cincinnati Bengals, there is a case to say that maybe there is some collusion against him because he did kneel. But the problem he's going to face is that when you look at the NFL and you hear everything that everybody says about the NFL is that it's a performance-based business. It's about your performance. And his performance was lacking in his last year in the NFL with the San Francisco 49ers. So much so, I think Bo was saying that they moved his position. Like, he had to move around a little bit because they were trying to figure out where to put him. And nowadays, when you look at the way that the NFL is set up nowadays, John, you look at Dez Bryant's contract.
Mm-hmm.
They're all about getting more bang for your buck. And if you're not getting more bang for your buck, then I'm sorry. You're not going to keep your job long. So that's why it's going to be hard to prove, because I can almost guarantee you that when he files his collusion case and he tries to bring people in to talk, they're going to talk about his performance. And they're going to talk about his fit with the team. And they're going to bring
right,
stuff
right,
like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Somebody at Cincinnati is going to go, we weren't worried about you kneeling. We were worried about you sitting because you weren't no good.
Yeah.
And you're going to be on the bench.
Something like that.
Yeah, right.
And how much money you were asking right. for, or something like that. So it's going to be tough to prove. You know, the only way, the best case to prove collusion is going to be Colin Kaepernick. He's the only shot that you have to prove that there is collusion.
And Colin Kaepernick is going to set the precedent. If Kaepernick wins his case, then there's going to be other players that are going to try and follow on. If Kaepernick loses, every case from here on out is over.
I think that the NFL and owners are kind of worried about that, especially when you hear about some of the stuff that came out of the owners' meetings and some of the concerns that they had. I think it was a story on Pro Football Talk a few weeks ago where they were talking about the somebody secretly taped some of the discussions at the owners' meeting when the owners were sitting around and talking. And that's what's probably going to help Colin Kaepernick's case a lot. It's really because there were some concerns that the owners had about
lawyers are going to try and get that thrown out of court, you know?
It's you can read it. Like, you can read the transcript online.
Well, okay. I mean, well, it's already out there. Hey, by the way, tomorrow, Dukes of Bell Show going to be at Twin Peaks in Buckhead from 2 to 7 on Friday. Great way to get your weekend started. But Dukes of Bell tomorrow at Twin Peaks in Buckhead from 2 to 7. Hey, there's a story this morning that is breaking out of the New York Times about something that happened a couple of years ago involving cheerleaders in the NFL and nudity and escorts. And, oh, yeah, you got to hear it. It's next. But John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Just when you thought they couldn't be more raw...
Is the pollen kicking your guys' butts, too?
Yes, sir.
I don't have pollen allergies.
Nope.
They open their mouths.
I actually did a line of pollen off my car. just
gross. Rick and John, middays 10 to 2. Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Now hear this.
Hey, did you hear this?
And welcome back to The Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9, The
drip,
Game
drip.
From the Kia Studios.
Drip, drip. You know this song, John. Drip, drip.
All right. Year, artist,
it just
title.
Came out. What's
2018, Cardi B came through
drip, drip.
See, I could do the 1975 thing. I can handle that one.
We'll go there.
Your daughter probably knows this song.
Oh, I'm sure she does. Everybody knows something about their career that they say, look, you know, I fully understand my career. So when somebody says something to you, you go, look, let me explain it to you. Like when Hugh talks to me about, you know, the workings of an NFL locker room or how to play the defensive line, he's the guy that knows. I don't know. I mean, I broadly as a fan, I watch, but I don't really understand it. I mean, because he has the inside. So trust me when I tell you, after 40 years in the national media, that when the one thing that's true inside these newsrooms, when the media gets its hands on a narrative, okay, a narrative, they talk to each other, yak, 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 and then they go, ooh, that's a good idea. And then they, instead of covering the news, they'll get a narrative going inside a newsroom, and then they go find examples to support that narrative. Follow me? And so understand the newest narrative that's coming out of places like the Boston Globe and the New York Times is, we think that the NFL is exploiting women by using them as cheerleaders. So let's go and find stuff that supports our theory that there should be no cheerleaders.
I see where you're going with this. Because the lady that came out a few weeks ago trying to ban the cheerleaders.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. That makes sense. But to be fair, when you set it up the way that you set it up, John, and said the way that you said it, that kind of is the case.
Well, that's my point. Sometimes they know something's coming out, or they know something. And for all the issues that the NFL has right now, you can add this one to it, because maybe they knew that this story was going to pop when they started saying that you should get rid of cheerleaders, because this story has popped. The New York Times reporting that back in 2013, and I'm surprised it took this long for this story to come out if all these allegations are true. The Washington Redskins cheerleaders went on a trip with the team and a bunch of sponsors to Costa Rica for their calendar shoot. As soon as the, and I'll just read the story to you, some of the highlights here. As soon as the cheerleaders arrived in Costa Rica, their passports were confiscated. Now, this is their story, okay? And we're giving you their story. Their passports were confiscated, which means they couldn't go anywhere. They couldn't leave. They were essentially stuck there. It gets on to go a little bit deeper into this to be a little bit creepier. The calendar would feature no nudity, but several of the cheerleaders were required to be topless staying at the resort, the adults-only resort they were staying at in the secluded area of Costa Rica. The representatives of the Redskins then invited spectators to watch this. The cheerleaders were required to be topless and in front of these invited people. One evening, at the end of a 14-hour day of shooting for the calendar and for video, the squad's director told 9 of the 36 cheerleaders that their work was not done. They had a special assignment for the night, a mandatory assignment that some of the male sponsors were going to pick them for personal escorts to a nightclub. Yeah, that's a problem. If that's true, that's a big problem.
It seems like every time we talk about cheerleaders or something, I tend to get called into the office. So I'm going to go ahead and tread lightly on this subject, just a little bit. But as I recall, they're used, like when I played way back in my day, like to take like nice pictures that are suggestive, like the beach pictures with your hands covering up certain body parts or something. They used to do that. That used to be a part of the calendar. Like the whole it was a selling point.
Well, to your point, the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders were the first ones to come out in hot pants. And then that was elevated next by the tops that the Raiderettes wore. And then that was elevated by the first cheerleader shoot that got kind of that racy. And that was the Philadelphia Eagles cheerleaders.
I was there, John. I was there. And I know exactly what you're talking about. And that's why I'm really treading, like, really, like, because I was there. And I kind of know how the things, like, you know how the things, and I'm stuttering, I know, and I'm trying to pick and choose my words carefully, but I knew how things went. Mm-hmm. And to hang, like, there were certain cheerleaders got carte blanche,
right?
And certain cheerleaders were more popular than others,
sure,
but that's a highly respected business. I don't think that goes on now. I just want to put that out there. And they are highly respected. They are women that, like we were told a few weeks ago, they are women that have like other careers outside of cheering. And the cheerleaders and the cheerleader directors have done a great job of making sure that does not happen anymore. So it's one of those things where at one time that was acceptable to hang out with certain, you know, key members of, you know, whatever, the the committee where, you know, you hang out the people that have money,
right?
Like the big wigs, mm-hmm. the big wigs, if you will.
You know, I don't know about this story and how much, you know, again, we're getting one side of the story and we're getting words like mandatory and required to be topless and mandatory to be an escort. We'll find out. But this is the New York Times reporting this, and we'll, you know, we'll see.
But
that's their side of the story here.
But the Redskins, like the Redskin cheerleaders, and listen, I'm not saying that they did this on purpose, but I think that they kind of did. And anybody that has ever played at Redskins Stadium knows that they used to do this. They would stand there, like we would come out the tunnel, and they would stretch like right, like we're walking out for the game. They would
distraction.
Do all that like right, like all like all kinds of like it was real, it was provocative. And like they would have on their little outfits and everything, and they would just and like you're getting ready for a game, and they would just be stretching right there. Not saying that what they're saying isn't wrong, anything like that. But mm-hmm. I'm just saying it's like, you know, they used to like do like stretches.
All right,
stuff.
So here's my thing with this New York Times story. I guarantee you, we had the articles that were written a couple of weeks ago that the NFL ought to get rid of cheerleading. Six teams don't have cheerleaders, right? There are half a dozen teams in the NFL. Ooh. Now we follow it up with this article and these accusations against the Redskins, which, if they're true, they're pretty damning. But again, it's only one side of the story. I have a sense that what we're going to hear is that NFL teams are going to start to shy away. With the male cheerleaders coming back into the game, well, it's the Rams, right? That's the other thing. It's the Rams, correct? That the Rams are having male cheerleaders? All right. And Ravens already had them because we know about Zeno. But the Rams have – right.
Stop.
This is true.
No, he's good at what he did.
I know. He was good at what
he did. Zeno puts it down with the cheerleader
crew. I think what's going to happen is for teams that want to keep cheerleaders are going to go to college-style cheerleaders, which is to say less dance team cheerleaders and more male-female athletic cheerleaders. You know what I'm saying? Like gymnastics kind of cheerleading, like high school and college.
I think the Falcons do it the right way. I think that their cheerleaders are highly respected in the community, and that a lot of cheerleaders around the NFL are highly respected in the community. They just have to do a better job of, I guess, I don't know what they got to do a better job of. I'm going to go ahead and let that go since the music playing, because I might say something stupid.
Well, here's nothing that's stupid. The Braves, they have something, Billy Preston, that you want to be with, because they got something. Except nothing that they left the Mets with on the scoreboard last night. That big old zero from Sean Newcomb and company. Braves are hot in first place. The story's next with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!